Is there good earned media? Is there bad earned media? And how do you earn earned media?
For me, earned media is really around other people bragging about your work for you.
It's also really important to not think of PR as someone we phoned at the end, but it's actually baking it right into the beginning.
Working with a news cycle, it's such an obvious thing that I think so many people miss.
If you want to move people, if you want to move your customers, you can't just move them digitally.
How do you prepare a client when you are doing such a specific strategic earned media piece?
How can I get this thing onto the news?
The work that travels on social will inevitably, I find, end up in media.
Let's think about tweaking this a little bit, or the nuance of it, to make it less ad and more editorial.
This is Talking in Creative Circles, the official podcast of The Creative Circle, the voice of South Africa's advertising industry, in partnership with Kagiso Media Radio.
Would you believe it? We made it to episode 2 of Talking in Creative Circles. That means enough of you listened to episode 1. Thank you, and welcome back. I'm Kerri-Ann Stanton. I'm a PR strategist and creative at an independent consultancy called KA Muses. And I'll be the guest host for this episode. Today, we're going to deep dive into earned media. Is there good earned media? Is there bad earned media? And how do you earn earned media? With me, I have the very shy and retiring Mike Sharman, CEO of Retroviral. As author of 2 books on his industry experiences, he has literally written the books on earned media. Hi, Mike.
Hello. Let's make some magic today, shall we?
Let's do it. I also have the very talented Stephanie Kak, Executive Creative Director at TBWA Huntley Scaurus. Steph's work often has earned media at its core, and you will know her from her frequent stage appearances at all the big global award shows. Hey, Steph.
Hey, Kerri-Ann. How are you doing?
Good, good, good. Okay, you two, let's start with the easy question, and let's keep it really basic up front. What is earned media? And how do you get it? Mike?
For me, earned media is really around other people bragging about your work for you. Earned media is when your mom hears about your campaign on the radio and she posts to Facebook to tell all her friends how proud of you she is.
Cool. Steph, for you?
Well, earned media is earned, not paid for. It's what other people say about your work and not necessarily what the brand is saying about its latest work. Not to say that it's unsolicited. I think it's still prompted in a way that you need to get it on the radar of the right people, but it's the objective commentary on your campaign.
Great. Mike, as you come from a PR background like me, do you have some thoughts on the difference between earned media and PR? I mean, isn't it all just PR, really? Or are there actually 2 different things?
So for me, I think it's ironic that the PR industry in general is pretty terrible at PRing itself. And I think that's why the ad world came along and created a synonym called earned media. Because for me, I think when we started Retroviral, we actually never wanted to be positioned in a PR space. Like for us, we had this very hybrid approach to comms, and our thought process was around the more digital savvy that people become, the more we crave human interaction. And, you know, as things are cyclical, that's kind of where we are once again in our post-COVID world. So the more digital savvy we become, the more we crave human interaction. And that means it's digital, it's PR, and it's activation is a combination of these different elements. Because if you want to move people, if you want to move your customers, you can't just move them digitally, because the pixelated barrier prevents you from that emotive connection with an audience. You still want that touchy-feely, soft skill aspect for your brand to live in the world outside of just branded content. How does it permeate in the real world? How do you have samples, tastes, smells? We've seen it recently with the McDonald's smell billboard out of the Netherlands. Like, there's beautiful moments like that where you can really create talkability. So for me, I think PR and earned are essentially one and the same. I just think that there are elements within the earned world that ups the creative level, the craft of getting, like Steph says, that independent third party to promote your brand for you through a channel to an audience that is relevant to your business objectives.
Absolutely. It was always so easy to explain earned media to clients by saying there's earned, owned, paid. You know, this is what earned is. This is what owned is. This is what paid is. Paid is is easy, right? But even that is blurring for me at the moment because it has to be organic across all three. The paid has to influence the earned. The owned needs to influence the paid. It's such an interesting thing that's happening. I think that it's not just about the earned anymore. It's about that completely integrated talking of all of those elements coming together. Okay, so I think we've had a good go at defining what earned media is. I would love to hear about some of the work that you've had that really took off from earned media or had it at its core. And the more you can share behind the scenes stuff, the better, because it hardly ever happens. I think that a campaign starts with earned media. There's an idea, and then the PR company gets brought in afterwards. But you two are very good and adept at knowing upfront what you want the end game to be. So, Steph, maybe is there some work that you want to share?
So in my career, there were times when we really wanted earned media and we just couldn't get it, and times when we really didn't want earned media and just really got it. So I think it depends on brands. I think some brands that I've worked on in the past, like when I was at Grey, I worked on Savannah. And because Savannah is such a cultural phenomenon, really, it's such a big part of the cultural fabric of this country. It's a brand that lives and breathes on social, and people are very emotionally invested in that account. So on Savannah, people talked about the brand naturally, and so anything that you put out on the brand was noticed. So this helped a lot with getting the momentum and the scale and the force that is inherent in the brand going. It's very much about being in the conversation. It's having its time in the cultural conversation of this country. The flip side of that is when things go wrong, it's still very much in the cultural conversation of the country. So we had a situation during the pandemic, there was a national glass shortage and we had major stock issues. And the noise and the conversation and the pressure on the brand came from everywhere. And news outlets were picking up on the story because it's what their readers are interested in. That forced us to come up with quite a creative solution. And so you use this momentum behind you, and we came up with something called the People versus Savannah Cider. And we took ourselves to cancel court, and we tried to cancel ourselves for running out of glass, and we pivoted to cans. So that is an example of something that was actually born out of a lot of earned media. And it was a direct response to people, which is like my next point. Like, earned media allows us not to have a one-way conversation, but it becomes a true and honest conversation. And the days of separating earned media and public relations with social are like over, because that's where the conversations happen. And often journos would scroll social pages to pick up on the next story. You've seen this happen a million times. So really, that was a social campaign that, at its heart, had a PR crisis, actually. So it doesn't always work like that. I think one of the most surprising instances in my career was we did a campaign for Huggies. It won Grand Prix at the Lurys, and it was for nappies, for active nappies. And the idea was that we would create the world's first marathon for babies. And so we rigged up five cute little babies up to Fitbits or fitness trackers, and they competed against each other. The output of it was a web series. Normally, I'd expect to put that out and get a few likes and, get marketing press to write about it. But because the content was so enjoyable and people on the internet love babies, it's internet crack, dogs and babies, this thing went quite viral, and we were asked by various publications to feature it. So it didn't just happen organically, of course. It's about choosing your platforms. It's about where you're going to see that. Funnily enough, publications like You and Caxton that really helped to get the scale. And so it was probably one of my most successful campaigns from a purely like earned media point of view, which kind of happened. And I think that's the point, is that We often finish a piece and we think it's bloody brilliant. And then we go to the PR practitioners. I won't mention any names, Kerri-Ann, but we'll go to, our PR practitioners and ask them to make it go viral, like exploded. And sometimes it doesn't happen. I think people want to be entertained. They don't care as much as your brand and your work as you imagine. And so it really is based on the piece of work and whether it's something people want or not. And you can't change that.
And I think, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. I know what we're talking about here. It's also about taking a piece to a PR company or a PR agency and saying, explode this, and being open to hearing, well, it's a consumer piece, but I'm actually going to get it into business media to get the consumer attention. That's when the cleverness of earned media really comes into play.
That was a great lesson for me. It's like sometimes we think about it one dimensionally. Whereas if you find your hook or what is interesting to the media, if they actually want to know about the CEO of the brand or the shareholders of the brand or the recent financial successes of the brand, it's finding those hooks and exploiting those hooks and then tagging the work onto the back of it almost. It's not a one-size-fits-all approach. I think every publication, every media house will have different fields of interest and priorities. So I think we need to be a little bit more clever about how we approach or work with clever people like yourself.
Mike, now I'm going to come to you. You, because I mean, here's Steph is talking about, I mean, and it's that beautiful kind of seesaw between organic and, pushing, making it happen, the unexpectedness of when something does earn media space, the horror of also when it earns media space and it shouldn't. You are pretty much the master of the zeitgeist. You are very good at spotting an opportunity. We've seen it with Creepy Crawly. We've seen it with Tinder Swindler. You are very good at spotting a cultural moment and then creating something very quickly that then earns that media space at scale. My question to you is, how are you managing a client in that space? Because it can flop and it can be beautiful. How do you prepare a client when you are doing such a specific strategic earned media piece?
So I think, just to take a step back, I think some of the comments that Steph made now are just super interesting. I think that there isn't enough collaboration at premise phase and at insight phase, because you've got this traditional kind of strategic approach to generating your content, whether it's a branded content piece or a TV commercial. And then a lot of the times, like I saw this in the early days of Retroviral, we were brought in, can you PR our ad? And for me, it was like, well, the ad is designed to be paid supported, not to be PR supported. And I think that that's where a lot of people get stumped, in the sense that they haven't considered the full earned opportunity and the headlines. Like for me, I think about it the opposite way around. For me, first, the premise is super important, and the insight, and whether that's going to resonate with enough of a mainstream audience in South Africa. Our challenges are obviously the various languages, cultures, backgrounds, shapes, and sizes of audiences. And for so many of us working on telcos or banks or other financial services products, they really are trying to be all things to all people. So that's where a lot of that challenge exists initially. But I always think about ideas, whether we are working from within the agency out or collaborating with the clients, like, how can I get this thing onto the news? And for me, the gut feel is always, this idea can make it onto primetime news. That's the most important part of the litmus test for me. These examples that you speak about, we have a very nimble approach to working with a lot of the clients that have that moving at the speed of relevance, inverted commas, approach. And then we also have a very bare bones, brutal honesty in the agency. So when it comes to Creepy Teacher, when it comes to 60/60 Swindler, it's bouncing the idea with the team first. And I can ask that question very honestly and say, hey guys, my octopus teacher, is that a and is it a concept that is known universally enough in South Africa? Or is it like white people in Nuduk represent or resonate with this? And it's interesting hearing all the different voices in the agency, because there's this brutal opportunity to say, you're being the old white guy in the agency. That's not going to fly at a mainstream level. Or this is really interesting. Let's explore that further. So for me, I think that's an important component. And then when we look at things like the grand box, you know, I always love looking at the solution very differently from how other people would. If you consider the Springboks, they have 50 plus sponsors, right? And so many of the content that came out of the World Cup was very expected. Rugby players scrumming Hiluxes, rugby players wearing new shoes, rugby players rubbing a moisturizer on their dry elbows. Obviously, the stuff that Steph's team did with MTN with the deaf and hearing impaired choir, like that was really interesting because it obviously cut through the clutter in a different way. And from our perspective, like we said, what is brewing greatness from a South African context outside of just the players? And we went and looked back and said, you know, grandmothers have such a defining moment in South African and Pan-African culture. So if you look at elements like Siya Kolisi, Makhazole Mapimpi, even with this recent Chasing the Sun, Kirtley Arendse, so many of these young men were raised by their grandmothers. And I mean, there's a whole dearth of like societal ills that are associated with why that is. So I'm not going to get into that on this podcast, but the reality is grandmothers are our defining rock for so many of us. Still gives me goosies, that insight. And by going around and interviewing, having a beer with a Bok Gran, like it was just a really nice way to celebrate the players from the eyes of their grandmothers. And once again, a beautiful cross-section of English Afrikaans and a Zulu Grand that we could go on the road, we could interview them. And for me, like the content when it's live is never where it ends. Like, how can you sweat that asset even further? So Creepy Teacher was taking Glenn to the media, same with the 6060 Swindler. With Grand Box, Melody, Malcolm Marx's wife's gran, she was the most charismatic of the grands. So she acted as my spokesperson because, like Steph says, not all journalists want to interview the CEO of the brand. They want to interview the protagonist from the branded content piece. And by putting Granny Marx onto primetime ENCA news, getting onto Talks and Chops to go pour a draft for the guests, and then chatting to someone like Thando Tabete around what Granny thinks about going viral and her absolute gems of responses, like that's the magic that then ultimately converts opportunities. And for me, from a scientific point of view, you then, with your so many of your traditional news channels, they all have digital channels now. So you then get your coverage into a digital space with backlinks that ultimately support and prop up your organic SEO. So for me, that's the whole ecosystem of the science. It's like, end point, what's the news headline? Work back, strong premise, develop a remarkable piece of content, and then sweat the assets within that space to generate talkability and the organic SEO. So ultimately, you're propping up this ecosystem where your brand is living through socials, living through earned, it's living through owned and shared. And it just becomes such a fantastic space where your consumer is getting hit 7, 8, 9 times with this campaign. You then make it into WhatsApp, and suddenly you've just got this spiral. So for me, a lot of our work is very deliberate, and that's why I'm fortunate that, you know, we believe we have the science behind virality using earned as our hook into that world.
And you know, I think what you're saying about the spokesperson is so important because in the earned media space, when you're pitching your story to producers, it's not about knowing the newsreader and it's not about knowing the Leanne Mannes. It's the producers, right? They're the gatekeepers. And you have to be pitching to those gatekeepers, and they will go, well, this is a KFC story, so take an ad. Or this is an AB InBev story, take an ad. So it really is about the spokesperson that you can put forward. So they don't always want to speak to the marketing manager because it feels like an ad. The marketing manager wants to be there. They do invariably want to speak to the CEO or the CFO or exactly what you're saying, Mike, the star of the branded content piece. And it is risky for clients to understand that, it is about letting go of these are the spokespeople. They are the media trained ones. They are, it's the same as I have such a thing about media training. I'm like, can we just stop media training? I want to hear people that are nervous. I want to hear people that their voice is shaking. I want to hear that they are excited. The more rehearsed you sound, I switch off.
Because it just sounds like a live read then, and we know that it becomes like white noise on your listening or viewership.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So we've spoken about, we know we want to get onto ENCA and Sky News and Newsroom Africa. We want to get onto the radio stations. We want to get onto Mhlobo Wenene. We want to get onto Ukhozi, all of those places. But we do know there's been a lot of changes in media over the last decade, especially with editorial media. The chances of getting into a Financial Mail or a Business Day or even a U magazine these days is pretty slim. And then there's the rise of TikTok. But how have these changes affected the way that you shape creative ideas? Because we know those beautiful case studies always have the radio interview, the TV interview. But how is the rise of TikTok? How is the rise of tabloids? How's that affected the way that you shape a creative idea? Steph, should we go to you and then Mike?
The work that travels is based in an insight or a conversation that people care about, right? So instead of starting a whole new conversation, it's always better the best work taps into something that's already going on in culture and kind of hijacks it or puts a spin on it or just drops into it. So from that point of view, the work that travels on social will inevitably, I find, end up in media, in traditional media, if it's done right. And like Mike said, most media lives on digital right now. So I find that the teams that are really adept at creating this are very in touch with what's happening on TikTok, very in touch with what's happening on Twitter. And kind of from inception, the idea is designed to appeal to that audience to live in that space. And I guess it's also really important from inception to not think of PR as someone we phone at the end, but it's actually baking it right into the beginning. So from the beginning to say, it's kind of like another audience, another target audience. Yes, we've got our consumer set, but how are we going to appeal to media? What is the stunt? What is the launch event? What is the drop? What is the engagement piece. So from that point of view, I guess the lines between PR and creative, like we've been saying, the lines between PR and social are completely blurred and completely collapsed.
Mark?
I have two examples of how we are gearing content to go live on TikTok first, because we find that the selfish approach to TikTok is that the algorithm is a lot more forgiving when it comes to organic spread and reach. And also, with putting a few bucks behind it here and there, the rocket fuel on that platform is incredible. And TikTok wants that because it wants you to get the taste the dragon of virality and come back for more. It wants you to serve it your attention. It wants to give you to give it your data. So we find that TikTok is a lot more forgiving from that reachability perspective. At the end of last year, we did a solar marketplace campaign for home, and everything from the title, funny solar ad, South African festive, it's not a sexy title, just gives it something that's very easily searchable. And it was this whole story about these two boys waking up for Christmas, so excited. And then it turns out that they actually weren't waiting for Father Christmas, they were waiting for the solar man because he's come to install solar. So a nice, quick little sub 60 piece. And then most recently, we promoted Chasing the Sun with a very left field piece of content based on the premise that South African men don't cry unless they're watching Chasing the Sun. And it was all about almost like a public service announcement promoting this fake day called SACMAD, South African Crying Men's Awareness Day, in order to get guys to like really let it out, to watch Chasing the Sun, to be vulnerable. So those two examples were perfectly aligned with go live on TikTok first in a 9x16 native format. And once it goes out, generate the millions of views, and then use the millions of views as the rationale of why funny solar festive commercial goes viral. Funny response to Chasing the Sun 2 goes viral. Because off the back of that, once again, it's 2024. Viral doesn't have a specific number, whether it's 100,000 or 2 million or 10 million. Like, viral is what you say it is. And for me, I believe, like, when you put those kinds of comms out there, with newsrooms being so much under so much more pressure, interested in things that are breaking through trends and cutting through clutter, when you go to a relevant producer or an editor with that story saying, here, this is relevant for the time because it's linked to solar and load shedding, here's an alternative story for you. You've seen all the emotive, formal, owned work coming out of Super Sport for Chasing the Sun. Here's a left field element that's gone viral. And by then writing your story around the virality of that, you end up generating earned media around your virality through virality inception.
Brilliant. Yeah. I mean, working with a news cycle, it's such an obvious thing that I think so many people miss. It's just like, just look, when is the budget speech happening? When is the State of Nation address happening? And it's working with that news cycle and jumping onto those opportunities.
Just to add to that, it's so interesting, like, if you think about how social is and content plans and all of this, like, tick boxable stuff that so many agencies are involved in, everyone's always aware of those special days or those national moments for social, but they're not considering how does it go into PRable opportunities and earned. You've got the lists of, purple orange flower day. Why aren't you using that to then filter it into the newsworthiness of your specific brand and taking that even further? And I think we're all under so much pressure that we just sit in our little box and our cubicle that we stop to think, hey, this is an earned or PRable opportunity in the making. Some gold here.
Exactly.
And I think just to add to that, like your initial question was like, we know how hard it is to get the radio and TV interviews. And yes, it is hard. And I don't think all case studies need them. I think if you can prove, like Mike said, that TikTok grabbed onto your ad and remixed it and made it their own, I think that's often more powerful than ending on Morning Live or the Espresso show. So I think our understanding of what impact means is also broadening.
Which brings me to my next question, because award season is pretty much on us now, and I think all these case studies are being built and made. Any advice for people wanting to win specifically in the PR or earned media space? What is the type of earned media in case studies that makes judges' eyes roll? That goes, well, that's not great earned media. Mike?
I just think for me, when it comes to PR and earned categories in particular, when you're judging them, there's almost like the tactics that all start sounding the same across the various videos. Like, there's no real differentiation. So the thing for me that really excites me and the stuff that I've seen on judging panels is when you start showcasing the types of coverage that you've generated with this idea and how they are either hugely impactful platforms because your fellow peers and the jurors will understand how difficult it was to secure an interview or coverage on that space. And they'll see the creativity that you've used to get to that. And then also to Steph's point, like in certain aspects of social or platforms where there's been a remix or there's been some kind of integration between your content that has become a trend out of its own accord and out of its own creativity. Like, those are specific elements and tactics that'll stand out from the usual crowd of what earned is typically presented as.
Dave?
Yeah, I think that's so true. I think, firstly, it's very difficult for South African work to win in a PR and earn category because we generally go up against, Beyonce live tweeting your ad out and a CNN interview and a Time magazine cover. So we have to be, we as a country, I think we're quite scrappy. And I think that's often what makes us like breakthrough is the scrappiness. How we hustle for things, how we make things happen, how we hijack things, But having said that, my advice would be is think of PR from the beginning, from briefing, bake that into the work. Think of how you're going to achieve earned media from the outset. So whether it's a stunt or an event or working with influencers to seed the idea, to give it scale. Also, importantly, when you're building your case studies, it will help you to document every single comment, every single mention, every single random comment on social media, take screenshots and keep it, because if you're gonna you often forget what you actually got and what coverage you got by the time you started your case study. So try and not be on top of it all, because you're gonna need it later. I think it's always about creating an illusion of scale, and I'm blatantly calling it an illusion, right? But you've got to make it seem like it blew up. And so it often does. But again, our blown up and, the international version of blown up are two different scenarios.
Mike, is there anything you want to add? I mean, the trick is to also make it look and feel like it was organic, even if there was a whole army, pushing things in the direction. I think that's also to show that it happened organically, in phases, maybe in the case studies.
Yeah, I mean, I think Steph touched on it earlier. It's like there's certain moments that you're controlling the tsunami, but then there's other times when the wave crashes, then it causes like earned that happens across the world that actually wasn't your science. It wasn't your specific intention. I mean, like with Creepy Teacher, we were able to get coverage in podcasts in Australia that we hadn't set up, but they'd seen a lot of coverage in other elements, and people were talking about it in Mexico. Stuff we've done on Nando's over the years, like it gets into public culture and part of the zeitgeist because it's a globally relevant sort of insight or premise. And I think, to Steph's point, it's like it's all relative, right? So, like, if you're a brand that, like, Volvo hijacking the Super Bowl, you've naturally got hundreds of millions of eyeballs of people engaging. And last year, one of the favorite PR campaigns was Heinz's Heinz Jack, where they found a dude called Heinz to go to Qatar for the Football World Cup. And there's almost like there's this cheekiness in some of those ideas where Heinz was so stoked that that dude got kicked out of the stadium and he got sent back to Germany, because then it gives you more fuel for your talkability and your story. And I think that that's the challenge, right? Is like, how cheeky can you be that's aligned to the brand's tone to then create these spin-off opportunities? I think that once again, because of the pressures of margin, of size, of newsrooms, we can't sometimes get to an idea and we don't push it further. So I think that our blowing up in our small country is very different, to Steph's point, to blowing up on that global scale. And I don't think it's about inflating the numbers. I think it's about trying to show apples with pears, because we're the tiny little apples. And I think that for me is an important thing, is like, how do we push the idea even further? Because I find a lot of times when you hit a KPI early on in a campaign, clients will then retreat a little bit and they'll start wanting to put budgets into other touch points and tactics, because you've hit your thing. They're going to look great at their review. They're going to look great at their board meeting. But it's almost like, how can you take this thing even further? And I think that's where things like these award-winning case studies from global programs and like the Cannes winners of like gold level or beyond, like those are taking that idea so much further into the different touch points, and it becomes an actual sustainable solution. I think that's why Castle Lager did so well with Bread of a Nation last year. It wasn't just an idea and an innovation for awards. It actually became something that, oh, now we can literally use this byproduct to feed South Africans, which has then, grown into its own potential revenue stream. And I think that for me is the stuff that it's not just about the ta-da gimmick, but it's like, how does that then filter back into the business to become an additional upside?
Yeah, I agree. Steph, I think you've really touched on a whole thing with the scrappiness. And it is, it's like winning the PR at a global level, at a Cannes, because so often with South African work and case studies, there's so much context that needs to be explained.
Absolutely. I think it's very difficult for to get an international judge to understand how big the Daily Sun is, right? There are categories within Cannes, like cultural relevance and single market campaigns. And I think if we perhaps just need to be a little bit more discerning as to what categories we pick, and to really unpack in write-ups, in supporting evidence, give them the idea of the scale of the publication in terms of percentage of the population, perhaps, as opposed to readership. It's trying to, I guess, give a sense of the scale in proportion to the size of our country. And also, where we do very well is actually low budget categories, because even our biggest budgets are peanuts, really. Again, demonstrating return on investment in a compelling way that might give us an edge as well.
Mike, any closing thoughts from you on the earned media space?
Yeah, for me, I think like we just need better collaboration. I think it's across all those various touch points. And for me, I see it constantly because I fortunately get to float between different teams a lot of the times. And just, having worked with larger agencies, either as us plugging in as a support or as us running parallel, depending on how many suppliers a brand has, there's a hesitance to chat to each other from the start. And I think so much of the best collaborative work we've done is when we are able to infiltrate that concept early on and say, let's think about tweaking this a little bit or the nuance of it to make it less ad and more editorial. And how do we go about doing that? And I think the debates that exist in that space before you've got signed off scripts, before you've gone into production, like that's very important to get everyone on the same page. Because once you've gone into a signed off script and you've got pre-prods and all of that stuff, it's going to become very difficult. And I've sat in sessions where people have been excited. I won't mention names, but early on in the start of Retroviral, I was invited to this large boardroom, and then this whole room of people were so excited with their content. They made me sit down and put my headphones on and watch this inverted commas viral video on someone's laptop. And I just said, guys, this isn't going to go viral. It's just an ad. Like, it's a beautiful ad. You've probably spent millions on it, but no one is going to give a shit. So let's take a step back and think, where's the newsworthiness of this thing? What's going to make people who run a platform that is delivering news to the nation, what's going to make them care about this thing? And I think that's the most important thing. Advertisers, we can't PR your ad. PR people, show the advertisers how to mix the creative PR thinking into your executions. And the number one thing for all people to remember this award season, take Carrie-Anne out for coffee and have a Lurie shit on your flat white. Then you are guaranteed to win a gold Lurie in PR and media. It happened to me. True story.
There you go. The question I ask all the time is, why does it matter? Why does it matter? Beautiful ad, why does it matter? Beautiful concept, why does it matter? And that's not my thinking. It was a Cannes judge that said that once. I have it written in my diary, every new diary at the beginning there, why does it matter? Why does it matter? Because that's what I have to sell to the media, is why it matters. Okay, thank you, Steph, and thank you, Mike. That's where we're going to leave things for today. As this is only our second podcast, we'd really appreciate your support in getting the word out there. So please follow or subscribe to the Talking in Creative Circles podcast to get future episodes. We are on all the main podcast platforms, as well as on jacarandafm.com under Jackpod. Bye for now.
Bye.
Peace out.
Talking Creative Circles is available wherever you get your podcasts.